Some not quite so bad news on jobs.
And a bidding war in high tech is no more.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon, and for Bill Radke, you're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, August 26th. Fewer people in the unemployment line, that's coming up.
It's check and checkmate for one computer maker in its bid to buy data storage guys 3PAR. And a lot of Germans want Facebook out of the job search. Later, want quiet on an airplane? You're apparently not alone. But first,
it's a brightening outlook relative to what it's been, but the jobs picture is still far from beautiful. New unemployment benefit claims fell sharply in the last week, down by 31,000, but they remain much higher than normal. Joining us now is Diane Lim Rogers, an economist with the nonpartisan think tank The Concord Coalition. Good morning, and just how significant do you think this let-up in jobless claims is? First decline in 4 weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good news. But we're certainly not out of the woods. I think we should be hopeful that this is a sign that we're not going to go into a double-dip recession, but the recovery is still going to be very, very slow because this is a very stubborn labor market this time.
Now, Ben Bernanke speaks tomorrow in Jackson Hole about the Fed's outlook, and the Washington Post calls this his most important speech since the end of the financial crisis. Do you think so, and what could he say to reassure you that he's on top of it?
Well, I don't know about it being the most important speech he's ever made, but I think it's a very crucial one. I think there's a desperate need in the country right now to restore confidence, both for households and for businesses. And I think what Bernanke needs to do is similar to what President Obama actually needs to do with fiscal policy, and that is to signal that he is in charge, that he knows of all the best monetary policy tools to pull out, and that it'll be something different from what they've done in the past. Because I think what Americans need to know is that there's going to be change, not just, you know, an effort, but something different from what we've already seen in terms of both monetary policy and fiscal policy.
We could use some clear signals. Diane Lim Rogers is an economist with the Concord Coalition and blogs at economistmom.com. Thanks for your insight.
Thank you, Bob.
Now to the big question. It's got to do with the state of California passing legislation to set up a new market for health insurance. This online exchange could be a model for other states as they implement the federal health care overhaul passed earlier this year. Marketplace's Amy Scott is with us live and has the latest for us. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Steve.
So how's this exchange going to work?
Well, California will set up a website where consumers can compare different health insurance plans. They'll be connected with subsidies if they're eligible, and there will be five categories of insurance that people can buy, ranging from high-end plans that cover lots of stuff to more basic catastrophic insurance for young people.
So, Amy, is this going to be a model for other states?
It's likely to be. Under the health care overhaul, states either have to set up one of these exchanges or people can use a federal version. I spoke this morning with Timothy Jost at Washington and Lee University. He says these don't have to be up and running for another 3 years or so, but California wanted to get a jump on it.
Setting up an exchange is going to be a very difficult process because it basically means restructuring the way in which we purchase health insurance in the United States. In most states, they will probably adopt legislation next year.
And Joe says these exchanges should make insurance more affordable by making the market for insurance more competitive.
All right. Marketplace's Amy Scott reporting live for us. Amy, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, August 26th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look in the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us right here in the United States. The German government has moved to improve privacy laws in Deutschland. Several high-profile companies in Germany recently were caught using digital technology to keep tabs on workers. Now, some Germans were spooked by that and have pushed for a new law that would stop your employer from checking out your Facebook page, the BBC's Eric Graydon reports.
Companies can no longer read employees' private emails, and employers can no longer friend potential employees on Facebook in order to see a job candidate's personal profile. But employers say limited security options for companies would seriously damage their ability to look out for their own interests. Reinhard Gohner is with the German Employers Association.
Fighting crime and corruption cannot be made more difficult. If there is concrete suspicion of an illegal act, targeted video surveillance still has to be an option.
Germans care deeply about their privacy. After all, this is a country where people haven't just complained about cars driven by Google to photograph streets and buildings. Google's tires were slashed and their cameras disabled. In London, I'm the BBC's Eric Graydon for Marketplace.
By the way, the German parliament must still approve that law. BP has pulled out of a controversial plan to drill for oil off the coast of Greenland. The British oil giant today confirmed that it would not bid for a project it had earlier been involved with. Why the sudden change of heart? The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports there are some theories.
BP won't give a reason for ruling itself out of the race to drill for oil off the coast of Greenland. But the country's prime minister says a company's safety record is very important to Greenland when granting licenses to drill. And the incident in the Gulf of Mexico was likely to influence its decision. Malcolm Bracken is an oil analyst at stockbrokers Redmayne Bentley. He says BP won't spend the money pursuing a licence it doesn't think it's going to win.
It's going to have to concentrate a lot harder on where it drills. It's going to be taking up fewer opportunities than it would have done because it's had to find $30 billion to pay for the damage.
But BP insists it hasn't been deterred from its long-term plans. It's due to start drilling off the Libyan coast in the next few weeks and says it's still interested in bidding for other licences around the world. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, August 26th. I'm Bob Moon for Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Looking for a bargain commodity investment? Natural gas is cheap. Prices are down 18% this month, which is good for buyers, consumers, and power plants. Not so good for producers. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Natural gas prices typically fall in the fall because we use less air conditioning. That's because natural gas is one of the fuels that produces electricity. On top of that, this year factories filling fewer orders are expected to use less of the juice, too. Natural gas prices are at three-month lows. But are producers paying attention? Raoul LeBlanc at the advisory PFC Energy says nope.
Drillers, the oil and gas companies, the producers, continue to ignore the market signals and drill, drill, drill.
Oversupply and weak demand pushed gas futures yesterday below $4 a unit. The standard unit is a BTU. But economist Gilbert Metcalf at Tufts thinks prices will come back.
Once this recession ends, we can expect that gas prices would go up to the $5 to $6 to $7 range, which is more historically where they've been.
The hurricane season could also push prices higher if a storm disrupts offshore natural gas supplies. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Dell says it's up the ante for the data storage company 3PAR and outbid Hewlett-Packard by 30 cents a share. 3PAR's board is said to have accepted Dell's offer. The bidding war bumped up the small company's share price from $9 to more than 25, which raises the question, was this all really a billion-dollar-plus game of chicken? Here's Marketplace's Gregory Warner.
It's the kind of puzzle that keeps tech analysts up at night. When Dell put in its first bid to buy 3PAR, the data storage firm, Hewlett-Packard declined to counter at first. Then HP changed its mind, big time.
HP trumped the Dell bid substantially. I mean, they came in at $24 a share.
Peter Falvey is managing director of the Technology Investment Banking Group at Morgan Keegan. He says that bid, seen as an overbid by some, left two outcomes for HP.
So either they win and they pay a relatively high price, or they quote-unquote lose and they make Dell pay a lot of money for it.
And pay they did. Dell's new $1.5 billion offer was accepted this morning by 3PAR. Falvey says there is one other theory for why HP suddenly jumped so hard into the fray. It got reporters to stop talking about the sex scandal around former chief executive Mark Hurd. Now we're all talking about this bidding war. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Oh no, there hasn't been much good news in the housing market this week, but luxury home builder Toll Brothers bucked the trend and reported its first quarterly profit in 3 years. Joel Rose reports the company's looking to grow more by launching a new subsidiary to buy distressed assets.
Toll Brothers isn't looking to buy that house down the street that's in foreclosure. The company is after bigger fish, loan portfolios consisting of commercial property and land for development.
You don't necessarily grow today by buying land from a farmer, so this is just another vehicle to continue to grow the company.
Roger Brush is the president of Gibraltar Capital, a new Toll Brothers subsidiary that specializes in distressed assets. This may sound like a major shift for a company that's known for building big, expensive houses on the edge of suburbia. But Brush says Toll Brothers has experience scooping up properties at risk of default in the early 1990s.
And ultimately, some of those properties became some of our very successful communities in New Jersey.
Gibraltar has already closed its first deal, acquiring a stake in $1.7 billion worth of loans and properties, mostly in Florida, Nevada, and Arizona. And Toll isn't the only major home builder that's looking to invest in distressed assets. Alex Barone is an analyst at the Housing Research Center.
A lot of these builders, they have several billion dollars of cash in the banks, and that cash is not earning anything for shareholders. So this might be perhaps a better way to make use of some of that capital and put it to work.
It's a strategy that makes sense over the long run, Barone says, but it implies that Toll and other builders don't see a rebound in housing sales coming anytime soon.
The fact that they're kind of diverting away from their core strategy suggests that, you know, the turnaround is not imminent.
Maybe not. Although Gibraltar Capital's Roger Brush says now is a great time to buy, whether you're an individual or the nation's largest luxury home builder.
When we did this back in the early 90s, it really set us up for our growth during the 90s, and we believe that today will set us up for our next period of growth.
But Brush didn't want to speculate about when that period of growth is likely to begin. In Philadelphia, I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the government gives its revised estimate for the country's economic growth rate, and leading experts are expecting slippage from 2.4% growth to just 1.4%. No question the economy's weak, but is it really all that weak? Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell is here with the opposing view. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Bob.
I don't know, can you be a contrarian and an optimist at the same time?
I'm going to try. I'm definitely going to try. And as you said, there's a lot of gloom and doom about the economy. But I just think there is some good news that's being ignored.
Okay, fill us in.
Here's some actual factoids, numbers, trends that I think need to be highlighted. And the most important is this corporate profit recovery cycle has been among the best in the entire post-war period. And I know you've covered it. We're all wondering, it's like the big guessing game. When are corporations going to start spending their cash hoards? Well, I think we're starting to see it. Take a look at corporate investment in equipment and software. It's growing at its fastest rate since 1997.
We also keep hearing these stirrings about, boy, things better improve soon or we're going to pull back.
Bloomberg did this study, and they looked at 200 companies in the Standard & Poor's 500, and they looked at research and development expenditures, 2007-2009. Now, you would think, with everything we've gone through, where would you cut? You cut R&D, right? That's
absolutely
a simple thing. That's down the road. I mean, we got to survive for today. And yet these more than 200 companies really increase their R&D expenditures during this period of time. I think that's good news.
I have to say, though, I've got another technical term for you. Don't stick your hand back in the flame.
Yeah, all right. Okay, well, I'm going to do that anyway. I'm going to stick my hand way into that fire. Look, household debt burdens are down. For workers who have jobs, their real incomes, incomes adjusted for inflation, are getting stronger. The other thing, and I don't want to make too big a point of this, but James Paulson, he's chief investment strategist at Wells Capital Management, he does, you know, he made the calculation. He said, look, it's not great, but so far this recovery has produced better job results than was achieved in 1991 or 2001.
Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
And finally, here's a pleasant thought. Imagine what a delight it is cruising at 20,000 feet with a sweet, well-behaved little bundle of joy.
Ah, yes. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, yeah, that.
That explains the results of an online poll out this week showing close to 60% of travelers would like a families-only section on planes. And of the 2,000-plus who responded on the Skyscanner website, 20% would prefer child-free flights.
Well, dream on. USA Today says the airlines it checked with haven't even considered the idea. By the way, some of the parents who voted would actually prefer to sit with other families.
Hey, what do you think, Steve?
I think if they can separate screaming kids at church, surely they can do it on an airplane.
Uh-huh. Well, our little friend has something to say to you about that. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.